CosmicRadio.tv. This podcast would be nothing without our patrons, so special thanks goes out to them. Want to join their ranks and support independent content? Head to our Patreon at patreon.com/8bitlife. Anyways, let us start the real show.
Do it.
All right. 3, 2, uno.
Wait.
One second.
Okay, go for it.
Okay, I'm ready.
It's funny. You're the second person that interrupts me all the time before a show. I'll talk about this in the main show. In fact, keep this all in the to my editor, Daryl, keep all this part in the feed between the 3, 2, 1, uno, because this is part of that gag. And then I'll do my old spiel and things like that. But my friend Rick Foster, which you hopefully you're probably familiar with him in general. He will always do that. Like since the first podcast says, "Hold on a second, all right, go," and I'll do my spiel. And so I've gotten used to with Rick. In fact, the last time I had him on, I went 3, 2, 1, you know, welcome to the I basically gave him no time to even remotely interrupt, to even remotely get in that one dig, that one quick thing. Like, nope, I already know this. I'm faster this game. And so I can't wait till next time I have Rick Foster on where he'll just hear me say 3. He's like, hold on a second. Like, he'll just basically, like, we'll have this, like, fight of who can get there faster. because that's the gag right now. Welcome
that's
to the fine
perfect.
Edition.
Also, it's good to hear I'm unoriginal. That is.
It's all good. Welcome to the fine edition of my so-called 8-Bit Life. I'm your host, Roberto Vegas. Of course, you've already heard all that fun stuff. And if you can't recognize the voice, that is the voice of Mr. Brett Rounsville, better known as Amtrek, I should say, on the internet.
Yeah, hello.
How's it going, sir?
It's great. Life couldn't be better. It rained money or something. But besides that, life totally couldn't be better.
It's funny how long you've lived with that handle, Amtrekker, and since like, how long has it been since you've even remotely done that? Like, how many years are we away from that now?
From the end of it? 7 years now.
Damn. I mean,
that's, and there was some spillover after that too. I was still kind of publishing. Still probably pretty close to 7 years. Yeah. What kind of douche gives himself his own nickname, right? So weird.
It's okay, but I mean, it's like 7 years on internet time is an eternity, you know. And I was just like,
for sure. There are so many people that follow me on Twitter now, and I mean, not that there are a lot of people that follow me, but a lot of the people who follow me, I run into them. They're like, "Hey, Amtrekker, it's good to see you." And I start talking about Amtrekker, and they're like, "Oh, what was that?" Like, no, that's where I assume that if you follow me, you know where the name comes from, and that is so not true anymore.
No, that's what's so bizarre for me is that your handle has such a connection to, you know, what was the thrust into the public. I say the public, I don't mean necessarily the internet public or Diamond Club or anything like that. You know, my introduction to you was through NSFW show, was through, I think back at BB Live show, actually, to be honest.
The very first ever guest on BB Live show. I was there for episode 1.
That's right. And I think I might have joined like way late and still one of my all time favorite moments within that entire incarnation of the show. For those who have no idea, Brian and Justin, Brian Brushwood and Justin Robert Young do a show right now on the internet called Night Attack, but it's had previous incarnations depending on where it was in the world and what point in time you were watching and where you were watching, in fact. And one of the incarnations was a BB Live show, sort of like, I guess, the proto show of what is now Night Attack, if we can call, you know, that the proto show. But there was a moment that I always remember from that show, and it was an episode with you, Odokta, obviously Brian and Justin, and Owen just said something, you know, something really, really charged or something like that. And you went to your screen and uttered, "Hold on, I got to adjust the contrast. Odokta is too black." And it's like one of the funniest fucking moments in that show. Like, I think you can look up Amtrekker and like Nightline and BB Live show. And I think that actually comes up on YouTube still. There's like a certain key.
It's on there somewhere.
Yeah. There's a certain keyword combination. That's very, very easy.
Try Amtrekker's problem.
I think that might have been what it is. Amtrekker's problem.
I think that's what it is.
It's one of the Like, there are moments in comedy that are just so fucking perfectly timed, and that was like one of the perfectly timed comedic moments in that.
Oh, movie. Stop!
No, it was. It's not that I'm saying like there. It was just like again a you know. Comedy's all, you know, always about timing, and just like that was so fucking timed because there's other moments of that show that I remember fondly that I've told Brian this. Like anytime I see Jay Brushwood, his brother, I always remember this episode where Jay was just gone. And
I feel like that was every episode that Jay was.
It was
like.
Every episode, but this one was greatest because Jay was gone, was on the show, and started just making phone calls saying like, hey, I'm live on the internet as the show's being recorded. You just hear Brian just like, Jay, we're on the air, so to speak. And it was just the greatest moment of just that wall being pushed down of just like, Jay doesn't care.
Totally.
was the greatest thing. But it's interesting to just kind of go back to that. Like since M-Tracker, I would almost say that more people know you now for Mission Pick if they're in that kind of knowledge.
Could be, yeah. I mean, that's for sure what I spend most of my time on now is Mission Pick. Amtrekker was a really big part of my life for a relatively short amount of time. Like, the only reason I know Brian and Justin is because of Amtrekker and because of the whole scene around Revision 3 at the time. But, I mean, looking back, it was kind of a blip in my history now.
Yeah, because like right now we're at a point where, I mean, what's the user base for Mission Pick at this point in time, if you're able to broadcast that out?
It's not huge. It's about 7,000 or so.
That's still pretty big. I mean, it's not, granted, in the grand scheme of the internet things, it's not that big, but
oh yeah,
for
it's
what
not,
it,
it's very much not that big,
right? But for what it is, for this idea of let's just, you know, here's the day's theme, take a picture that sort of succeeds that mission. And
yeah,
it's not like, oh, take a picture of you know, the Empire State Building or something that's very specifically hyper-local to an area. It's take a picture of summer or something along those lines. Like, that's your mission today, and that becomes a sort of, what does that mean? And then, you know, how you judge that. And it's like, again, it's an interesting, when you had launched that project, I had always thought that was a weird, an interesting way of doing that. I remember you had like a reason for it. I remember it was like Disneyland, right?
Well, I mean, like, I made it because I made it. And there's a lot of stuff in my life that came before that that plays into it in little ways between like Amtrekker and Disney and the Go game. But really, it's kind of a way to make every day just a little bit more interesting. Like, all of the missions are photos that you could take anywhere in the world on any given day. And I really love the idea that you wake up in the morning and you see the mission is like metal or something, and then that whole day you're looking at the world through the lens of metal. So like, all of a sudden things that are metallic have a different ring to them that day, and then the very next day you're looking at the same world. You might take the same route to work every single day, but that day's word is blue or something, and so now blue things mean something more to you that day. And I don't know, I really dig that concept, and I really dig the concept of like forcing you to challenge your creativity a little bit every day.
So let's kind of talk a little bit about the deving of that, only because I don't know if it's ever been documented how all this came about. When did you start Mission Pick? I think it was like, I know it was a couple years ago, but I can't remember exactly.
Yeah, several years ago. It's actually, I mean, the timeline isn't all that easy to pin down even for me, because it was wireframes long before it was ever deved. And I was working for a company called the Go Game at the time, for people that don't know. Justin and I used to work there together, Justin Young. And while I was working there, I hit on the concept of Mission Pick and asked the founders of the Go Game if they wanted to help me build it in some way. And so one of the founders put in a little bit of money, and then we hired a couple of devs. And there was a long stretch where things kind of got many false starts. Like, I hired a team from the Ukraine to build a version of Mission Pick early on.
Sounds so shady right now.
they actually did a pretty good job. Like, for a version one, just proof of concept, getting it out there, they did a totally fine job until they went completely radio silent when Russia invaded the Ukraine.
Oh, damn.
And who knew that Vladimir Putin could have some sort of effect on my dev table?
Wow. So ultimately, I mean, yes, that totally makes complete and utter sense of going silent the minute your entire country is invaded by another country of you know, invoking some type of sovereign power. But wow, I didn't even realize that affected Mission Fix lifespan, so to speak.
Totally. And they were in one of the cities that actually got invaded, and they didn't go radio silent for very long, for like a week or two, but even at that, or maybe even just a week, but at that alone, I was like, oh, okay, you know what? It's time to bring this closer to home.
Well, because if you're at that like critical point of launching something and you have this sort of product, like, oh, this looks really good, there's a couple of things I'd like to change. A week becomes an eternity.
Absolutely. You know? Yeah. And so like looking back, like, yes, Mission Pix started back then, but it really didn't get a toehold until probably a year ago, maybe a year and a half ago or so, when we started building a version that was more attractive, less bugs. And even to date, it's still very much a work in progress. There are companies like Twitter or Instagram who have, well, Twitter's probably a better example, thousands of employees at Twitter, hundreds of millions of dollars in funding. We are almost entirely built off of like, some proceeds from some stock I did pretty well on in Tesla.
Well, I mean, but that's the dream, really, is yeah. You know, in the internet world is to sort of become this product. And I don't think a lot of people quite know how, like, the cost of free products, especially when it comes to applications. Like, everyone sort of takes for granted, you know, that Twitter's for free or that Facebook is free or all these sort of things are free. Not just based on like what you sell or anything like that. That's an entirely different argument. But like, where do you guys tend to host your stuff? Like, what's I'm always cagey about like, what's your back end? What's this? Because I know a lot of people, if it were anybody else but you, a lot of people would say like, oh yes, well, we code in a Ruby background with Redis as our caching agent, and that'd be all they give me. You know, and they might say, yeah, we host in AWS, but that's about it. You know, but because it's you and your nature of, you know, you've been sort of this open person as long as you've been on the internet, like, you know, with your Amtrak stuff, kind of that, you have this, I have sort of an unfettered access or a little bit more access into how, you know, what goes into hosting an application like Mission Pix.
Yeah. So there is actually a company that doesn't quite exist anymore called Parse.
I remember Parse.
Yeah. So everything is actually still running on Parse right now, but we're getting ready to migrate it over to someone else. And Parse does host all of their stuff on AWS, but they were getting some sort of bulk deal, so they were actually slightly cheaper than AWS at the time. And they like have this kind of pre-packaged database that makes it really simple to just build and get started. And we never really hit our limits there. So really, things from the Parse angle are fairly cheap for us. Which isn't to say that I haven't made negative tens of thousands of dollars off of Mission Pix, but the Parse part is not the expensive part.
Interesting, because I mean that does bring up a wrinkle. For those who have no idea what Parse is, just to kind of quickly sum it up, I think Facebook owns them now. I think
Facebook does own them, and last January 28th, they decided that they were closing the business for good.
Right,
and they gave everyone a year to migrate off.
Right, and basically, Parse was this. There's a couple other ones like that. There's, I think,
Firebase from Google is kind of the big one that's left, but they don't have quite the full feature that Parse does. Like, Parse was also handling all of your push notifications and APIs.
Right. And then there's the other one. I don't know if they handle it anymore, but I think it was like Urban Airship or something along those lines. I forgot the name of the company.
Not familiar with that, but there's a handful of them out there, especially since Parse has shuttered. Some upstarts have kind of tried to fill the void.
Yeah. And basically what they do, for those people who are curious, because we talk about Mission Pix and this product, if you think about it on a user level, it's, you know, if you look at the world, you see different colors, like Brett was talking about, the idea of, you know, here's the prompt is wood, and like what things are going to wood. If you take the idea that here's a picture, and now you have to host it on something, the application, it's not simply like, well, we'll just put it on a website, see what happens. It's like, no, it goes into a website, and then that hits a database call, and that database then indexes it. And there's all these other things in the back end that power this application that you get to utilize, you know, to be able to see other people's picks and rate them and do all these sort of things. Parse was a company that handled a lot of that back end stuff a heck of a whole lot easier, because you don't have to think about things like, well, what goes into hosting a database? How many servers do I need? What, you know, what type of database do I use? Do I use a NoSQL one? Does it make sure, you know, make sense to use Oracle? All these different kind of products that exist that you have to sometimes think about when you you know, get to a bigger product, and having a company like Parse or any of the other ones that exist out there makes it like tremendously easier.
Yeah, it was an invaluable tool for kind of proving out concepts too. It was very easy to throw something up over the course of like a couple of months without having to build your own huge back end. And then if you build your huge back end, that's a third of your budget. And then you find out that the idea had no value to begin with. You're kind of hosed. Whereas Parse would kind of charge you as kind of more like an AWS model, where if you have too many requests in a given amount of time, then they start charging you.
Yeah, because a lot of times, especially on the internet, I almost think certain ideas need to be given time to catch on, need to be given time to be implemented correctly. Like Mission Pick, you mentioned at the beginning, it was just sort of this application that you know, you kind of prototyped out of the Ukraine and then sort of brought it back home. Let's kind of go back to, you know, talk about that in a second. But I always enjoyed those companies like Parse and stuff like that, just because it made, I'd look at that stuff like, oh, ooh, well, I guess I could host this. Because again, you think of all the nature of what goes into a modern mobile application. And it's not simply just a game anymore. It's not simply just this local resource. People expect to, you know, upload a picture to Twitter to get a push notification when something happens. And then you talk about user engagement and all this other stuff that kind of goes into that, that those sort of companies become invaluable to have, especially as a beginning dev, when you don't have to think about the stuff that becomes really way out of the scope of the actual project itself. You know,
yeah,
like
totally.
Hosting and that, like, that's, you know, even though it's part of the scope, it's not what a developer or you as the idea guy would even remotely, you know, come to mind right away. But let's go back to talking about Mission Pick and kind of the history of it. So Ukraine, sure. You know, week goes by, you realize you have to pull it back closer to home. How do you then approach it? Do you approach it? Are you coding yourself at that point? Do you find friends that are coding?
I had a partner early on who was doing a lot of the back end coding, who also worked for the Go game. But the best resource, I have a partner now for Mission Pick. His name is Shane McCafferty, who works out of Toronto. And I found him just by tweeting out like, hey, I'm looking for a new front end iOS dev, and ran into him. And he and I have become such good friends, and he's such an incredible developer and just a gifted human being, that I will never, ever do another project that does not involve Shane. Like, it's not worth it. There's no point. If you're gonna do something, you should do it with Shane.
It's
actually
funny.
You should.
I have
I need him to have some free time.
In video and web, I have the exact same thing. Like, I'll never do certain projects without Brant Hughes. I won't do certain projects without Matthew Fraser, Blender MF, and I won't do certain web projects without T2T2 and those kind of internet people. Like, I have those exact same people. Just like that, I if I have something, an idea, or I need to tap somebody quickly, or just tap someone reliable, I should say, I have the exact same feeling. It's like, if I don't do it with him, and there's other people, of course, that are in that list, like my producer Ash in 8-Bit Life, I wouldn't tap her without doing something new for 8-Bit kind of thing. But much like Shane in your capacity, like, I have those people, like, I will not do it without them.
Yeah. And Shane has helped us go to this interesting tipping point. So, like, there's this period where Mission Pick was this thing that largely people that knew me in some way were using, and they were using it because it was kind of like a fun thing that I built, and they got to like hang out with me in some sort of regard. So it was like, it was a 5-star hanging out with Brett doing a silly thing experience. And then Shane brought us to that tipping point where, like, now we're not getting measured against something that Brett could build at home. We're being measured against like Instagram and Twitter. And so now all of a sudden we were like a 3-star social experience. And once people start measuring you up against that, then all of a sudden you find that you either have to up your game completely or just quit. And so that was the period we hit where we were like, all right, well, now I have to leave my job at the Go game, and we have to start spending a lot more time and money on actually adding all of the things that people expect to be in this social experience. So we ended up putting a lot more dev time into like adding friends and paying attention to your friends and commenting on other people's stuff and all the adding and subtracting of other networks. And it gets very, very complicated very fast. The initial wireframe for Mission Pick was 5 pages. And now, I don't know, there's hundreds of thousands.
That's insane. I mean, I say that insane just because it's cool to hear that that's sort of where you think of Mission Pick now, that you approach it as this, not competitor, because the competitor is such a weird thing on the internet now, especially when you have 80 billion social networks now, and they're all trying to vibe to be this, you know, sort of thing, even though I think they all kind of roughly do the same thing, but sort of putting yourself in that sphere of, all right, Mission Pick is now part of the social network ecosystem. And how do you utilize that stuff?
And if you, I mean, to be fair, like, we don't see ourselves as a competitor in any regard, but if you don't measure yourself against people who are doing better than you, then you're probably doing yourself a disservice.
Yeah. I mean, especially in this sphere. I mean, it's near impossible. So Shane becomes your thing, and we start to launch it. When does it start to get, because I know when you started beta testing it, you kind of approached a lot of the internal chat realm crowd and sort of, you know, people of RL, for those, you know, who aren't chat realm, basically listeners of the show, listeners of stuff like Brian Brushwood's show and Josh Robert Young shows and stuff like that, that you tap them as sort of, here's the beta, the most beta test people that'll, you know, start the whole thing up.
Yeah.
At what point does it start to get beyond that sphere of people? Because I know it has to a certain degree.
Yeah. I would actually say relatively quickly. Probably shortly after Shane came on, Shane very quickly built out a couple of things that made everything more stable and made me more confident about talking about Mission Pick in public. So we got some really small stories on a couple of photography blogs, and that was kind of the jumping off point for a large number of the current users. We still have quite a few like Diamond Club users on there that use it every single day, and there's people with like longer streaks. So like we kind of think of, if you think of Instagram as a camera app with a social layer, we kind of think of ourselves as a camera app with a game layer. So there's like a lot of game elements where you can earn badges and streaks and everything. And there's some Diamond Club people on there now that have streaks longer than mine. And I don't even know how they did that. That doesn't sound mathematically possible.
It's like, I have beta data, damn it.
Better at my game than I am capable of.
It's like, I have alpha data, goddammit. I can hack the database and change this shit. How is it they're beating me?
And don't think I haven't considered that.
Oh my god, I'd love to see just like, yeah, I started back in 1920. was invented.
Very early on, there were a couple of days where I was like, there were probably like, I don't know, 20 users on there at the time, and I had won a couple of days in a row. So there was a lot of time in the beginning where I would fudge the numbers constantly. I'd be like, well, I don't want to win today, and this guy's pick is pretty good. He's in like third, but he's definitely better than second place. I guess my vote just counts for 12 today.
I just love that. I love the idea of Brett seeing other people beat his game, just like, fuck that shit. I can pull up the, you know, the command line.
Totally.
Oh, look, I'm winning now. Fuck it. Who knew? I just love that idea of just like, well, fuck this whole shit. I'm tired of this. Just sulking. I do.
So there's like, there is a certain amount of pride in it and a certain amount of pride in it. Like I would not feel proud to cheat to win. But there are days where I'm like, I have a great picture and I posted it very early in the day and I feel like it should have earned the win and it didn't. And so the day, we've corrected this a little bit, but there used to be, there's still a little bit of a bias, but not nearly as bad as it used to be, where if you post early in the day, you're slightly more likely to win, but you still have to post a very good picture early in the day. And the day that my daughter was born, I posted a picture of like me holding my newborn child at like midnight 01 and was like, god damn it, if I don't win today, I quit. We're shutting down Mission Pick.
I love that. I love the idea. Again, I mean, you know, that kind of brings up an interesting question. I mean, and you mentioned that Mission Pick is a camera app with a, you know, gamification, a game layer. And no matter what game you're playing, the word balance always comes up.
Mm-hmm.
How do you balance something like Mission Pick, especially if it being this idea that everyone kind of votes and sort of, you know, certain things rise to the top and win, you know, today's pick? Like, how do you balance that game? How did you approach the game part of it all?
It's gotten a lot more complicated and a lot of iteration has gone into it. So again, in that like early beta stage, it was basically just like you had 2 days to vote on the pictures. And that was just so that even the people who posted at the end of the day would have a 24-hour window to be voted upon. And that same 24-hour window, And we thought that would be good enough, and it was not, like, not even close to good enough. And it's boring to explain to you everything that goes into it now, but suffice it to say, each photo only gets 24 hours to be voted on. We prioritize friends stuff slightly over people who are not your friends, although we also measure how many times each photo has been looked at by everyone else in the app. And if someone's photo has been looked at significantly more times than another one, then we're always going to feed you the ones that have been seen least. So in theory, at the end of the day, you've seen your friend stuff more often than you've seen stranger stuff. And every photo throughout the app has been seen the exact same number of times, so that everyone has had the chance to be upvoted or downvoted the same amount of times.
Interesting. I would never even have thought about that aspect of how, again, because that's a game. You balance it. You go, okay, well, you know, here's the mechanics of said game. Especially if there's a winner, and it's, you know, even a social card game, there's still some sort of mechanics going on.
Yeah.
And that's why I was like, interesting that you approach it the way of making sure everyone sees this picture as best you can.
Yeah, and we're far from perfect. We still have like some things that we're going to have to tweak a little bit. And furthermore, we're leaning towards probably making it a little less balanced than we are now, in that because we are measuring how many times a photo has been seen relative to how many times it's been upvoted, we can also start to kind of filter out your role and show you like really good stuff most of the time, and then the occasional one that we think maybe not bad, but like isn't in the same league as the others. Does that make sense?
Like something that's, if you have like, well, this one hasn't been viewed as much, but this has like a tremendous amount of upvotes, or has upvotes very quickly in a span of time, that you can say, you know, let me put this in feeds, because this might be something good. If people who are seeing it in, you know, within a minute are all upvoting it, like, well, that means something's happening here. We don't know what that means, but we'll see if it's a winner kind of thing.
Yeah, and even more importantly is the other end of that equation, where we see like a photo that has been seen 20 times and has one upvote. We don't need to clog your feed with something that's like almost definitely not going to win and probably isn't that great of a picture. Like maybe it's just kind of causing you visual pain.
or maybe it's just more focused to that group of friends. As opposed to the world.
And we still always prioritize your friend stuff, so you'll still see that.
Right, exactly. And that's again, I just find it so, it's definitely an interesting project. So here comes the next question, especially when it comes to balancing. And we talk about social networks. You mentioned that though it's not competing with something like Instagram or Twitter or something like that, it's in that league of an application, or it's viewed as that. How do you then approach the game with the idea of people maybe just wanting to play with their friends, maybe not wanting to be in this giant pool of the world? They just sort of want to like have like a local, you know, if we talk about, AAA first person shooter games, you have like your grand servers and then you have your private servers kind of stuff.
Yeah, well, we actually kind of do that. And we will probably filter it out a little bit more in the future. But right now, the way we filter it is there are two leaderboards every day. There's the overall leaderboard where you're competing against everyone. And then there's your friends leaderboard where you only see your friends stuff. And we also do a couple of things like on the overall leaderboard, we hide all of the scores and show them to you randomly so that there's no feeling of like which one's actually winning at the time until the next day when we start revealing like who's in 10th, 9th, 8th overtime. Whereas on the friends leaderboard, because we assume that people are just kind of competing against their friends and just more or less doing it for a good time, we show you all of the scores from moment one. So you can like always kind of know where you stand with your friends. And then we're going to be, if all goes well, we're going to be implementing another feature at the end of the year, which is the concept where I can say words with friends or something. I can say like, hey, Roberto, I'm going to challenge you tomorrow. And then you agree to that challenge. We don't know what the challenge is going to be, but come like midnight the next day, we both find out that like, bam, the challenge is porcupines or something, and then whoever takes the best picture of porcupines is going to be you're still going to be measured by the community at large, but you're really only competing against that one person.
That's interesting. That'd be a very interesting dynamic that I can see a lot of more famous internet people than me taking advantage of. only because like it would be interesting, you know, I find it fascinating definitely to have this competing sort of force and these sort of competitions internally. That's fun and cool. But I like the idea of like, if I think of like a Brian and Justin Tenet, and they both sort of go head to head, and the prompt is, you know, noodles or whatever. And it's like, well, now I got to find the best pick of noodles in the world, or where, you know, my world at large, and having them both kind of compete against the masses of the internet. That seems like a really, really interesting feature. I can only imagine, like, so I guess that does bring up an interesting question then. How do you then approach different ideas in this product? I mean, especially Mission Pick is, you know, not saying that there isn't any balance to go on. There's innovation for sure. But in the product is pretty much set. You have, you know, picture taken, prompt of the word, picture then taken against that, voted on there. Like, how do you innovate new ideas in that kind of thing?
That is never a problem. There is always far more that you want to do than you can afford to do. And that's kind of taking a narrow view of things. It's a little bit like saying like Instagram is done. You take a photo and then you post it and then your friends like it. But there's always plenty of things that you can do to tweak the experience or make the experience more broad. Like, for example, we know full well that Mission Pick turns some people off just by dint of being a game. Like, there are some people that aren't going to want to compete when they show their photos. They just want to show their photos. And so at some point, we're probably going to need to come up with some sort of innovation that allows those people to come into the fold and have a good time and still challenge their own creativity, like internally amongst themselves, without having to do it with everyone else. But like, again, like you're going to have not infinite ideas necessarily, but far more than you have the capability to deliver on. And so you just spend a lot of time prioritizing ideas.
That makes sense. I mean, especially if I think of the idea, I wouldn't have approached the idea of like, how do you pull people into this game that don't want to play the game? And I guess that's what you think about as an application versus sort of this mechanic. You know, that's what the trick, I think, the part about making a free mobile app that people don't really talk about. Because, if you talk about any gamer, they'll always slam any mobile game. They'll say, oh, it's not a real game. That's a real this. Why is it the case? You know, this is a popular application. People are using it. That doesn't mean, you know, they're having enjoyment. What makes their enjoyment less than my enjoyment, kind of thing? And no one thinks
exactly
about it, you know. Even the idea of like, okay, we make a free mobile application, you know, we talked about Parse kind of being the service and other services out there sort of making it easier on the cost level of hosting it. But you still have to, you know, people still have to download this game and people still have to utilize this app. Like, how do you grow an application like this? Like, what's been your approach so far beyond just, especially like you mentioned earlier that you had some photo blogs to kind of give you a sort of boost at the beginning, but how have you kind of gone about it now?
Yeah, that, to be frank, is always going to be the very biggest challenge, and is our very biggest challenge. So a couple of things we're trying are, some of it is just dialing in your onboarding. Like, you want to make that as simple as possible and encourage people to invite their friends while they do. We haven't delivered as well as we could there. And then part of the reason for doing that challenge experiment is going to be making it simple for that challenge to come like via text or via Facebook Messenger or something, where we can easily say like, Roberto wants to challenge his dad, but his dad doesn't play Mission Pick. So he's going to send this link that's going to bring his dad into the fold. So you're always trying to like find the balance of keeping the people you do have happy and making the experience as great for them as you can so that they tell their friends about it and invite people whenever they get the opportunity, but also bringing in fresh blood while you do that. It's a difficult balance. I'm not going to lie. It's by far the hardest part of starting a free app.
Well, I think it's the hardest part of any application because it's highly uncommon to have a change happen in a application. I say application, not just simply a Mission Pick or anything else. Like, I always remember the horrible story of, I think it was one of the Modern Warfarers, and in their balancing of the game, they changed how a bullet or something worked, like by a tenth or something along those lines, like a infinitesimal amount of something. But that tweaked the game to a point where you had people who were giving death threats to the developers because they tweaked some like random element, you know, just like a balance element. Or if you talk about something like Overwatch, you know, the cool popular Blizzard game, and you just idea of like nerfing somebody or just like reducing something because it's like, well, things are going not the way we expected as characters, so let's kind of balance it a bit. That you just have blog posts upon blog posts and forum posts saying like, why did you nerf this? Why has this changed? Now my entire strategy that I had that was letting me win is now completely null and void. And, you know, so everything, you know, it doesn't matter what your, you know, how big of a level of your product is, just changing that small micro thing that you may think as a developer is the better way of doing stuff, which, and it might actually be not just simply on the back end, but on the front end. But because some people are used to this workflow, that you just tweak it and it just, you know, angers.
That is no joke. Like, we don't have a ton of users, and I've gotten hundreds of emails like that. Like, people get up in arms when you change something that they're used to. It doesn't matter if you changed it to something better than what was before. It's just that it's not what they're used to anymore, and that drives people up the wall.
what was the biggest change recently that had that happen? I'm actually curious as to, like, where people were just like, no.
The biggest change is for, in the very beginning, we used to let you vote on photos for like 24 hours, right? Or 48 hours. So we would show you the oldest photos first so that like those wouldn't drop off the voting line before they had a chance to be voted on. And that wasn't good for the balance. Or no, that was fine. That was better for the balance, but worse for the experience, because you took a picture for today. You want to vote on photos that are also in that category. So we started showing you the newest stuff first, which again, like a little worse for balance, but better for the experience. So then we decide, all right, we can have the best of both worlds, and we can let you choose what category you're going to vote on. You can vote on today's stuff, you can vote on yesterday's stuff, or you can vote on like the self-portraits that people take when they are a new user. And that that caused an unexpected uproar, because people felt that like things weren't fair because they could now choose to vote on newer ones and ignore the older ones, when that was the case all along. It's just that they weren't clicking over to do it. We were just forcing it on them. And I have no idea why people got so worked up about that. But it seems to have settled down. Like, as long as people stay in and they get used to the new thing, then that will replace it. Like, I'm sure if we changed it back, people would lose their shit now.
But this is why I like talking to developers who are at least more open on products, because a lot of these things, you don't hear these stories. You don't hear these stories of like, yeah, we made a change that was already there. We just kind of put it a little bit more, you know, front forward. It's like, hey, it's here, guys. You know, have fun with it. People are just like, no, this is wrong. We're never this. Why did you do this? And you think I can only imagine, especially how do you do testing with this, especially now as a product and it's sort of a product in the wild? There's a testing methodology in a lot of things, and whether it be content creation or development, where you what's called an A/B test, where you have, let's say, for example, like you have a title of a post, and it's 50% of people, you'll show this one title, and another 50% of people will show another title, like, or change it midday and see which one gathers more traffic, SEO and all that kind of crap. How do you do testing for a thing like Mission Pick? Do you have like a set people of now beta testers that are in this hidden world bubble that you trust, like trusted users, or is there some other approach that you try different mechanics out?
Yeah, we do have a short list of people that get a beta version. So before we try to stay on about a 2-week release cycle, and every 2 weeks a release is going to go out to Apple, but offset 1 week it's going to get released to a very small beta list. But that really, it's negligibly helpful. Mostly it's just like to help find any crazy bugs that snuck in. Really, the truth about A/B testing, especially as we found it in iOS development, and especially as we've found it as a bootstrapped app in iOS development, is that it's prohibitively costly. Like, that means like not only do you have to build this thing, but you have to build a thing that is very near it, and you know for a fact that one of those will get thrown away. So at some point, you kind of have to go with your gut in some way. Although you're not just like taking guesses, you're seeing what else is working in the system and like what else is working for competitors and everything, and measuring that against the other. And we're in a very good position testing wise right now because we have such a small but passionate user base. So our users, I don't know if I mentioned this, but people spend more time on Mission Pick than the average user spends on Twitter, and people spend people are opening the app like 15 or 20 times a day. So we have this very passionate user base that are willing to put up with the stuff that we throw out there to, just to see if it sticks, which has made it very nice for us knowing that when something catches on with the people that we have now, we can feel confident that it's going to scale up for everyone else.
That's kind of a cool position to be in, especially as a smaller user base, just to have this very engaged and passionate user base that isn't simply just like, oh, the app's cool, launches and kind of goes away, but becomes sort of this application that they check throughout their entire day. As you mentioned, like having a higher engagement than Twitter is pretty, you know, I mean, granted, I guess it's a smaller user base and Twitter has a higher thing, but if you think of the idea that everybody's on Twitter and not everybody's on here, but the people that are on this application that you run, they're paying attention way more to your app than Twitter. That's kind of crazy.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting. And I mean, to be honest, like it is exciting for a given context. Like obviously it would be far more exciting if we had 200 million users using it.
Sure, of course.
But it would be impossible for us to even do what we're doing if we are constantly fighting for users to test it on. Whereas like we have this user base that like wants to see new stuff every day.
So then let's kind of take this, because we're not at quite the hour mark, but we're getting closer. And you mentioned the idea of that, yes, the joyous thing would be to get to 2 million viewers and to have, you know, all these kind of numbers. So that, how do you then, and then you mentioned, you know, scaling things up. How do you approach then scaling Mission Pick? Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that because, you know, we at the top of the show, I think you mentioned that, you know, you'd be surprised how much money, you know, goes in this sort of thing and sort of all that stuff. And I'm losing track of what was on the real show, what was on the pre-show, what was on all these hidden parts of it. So I'm like being very cagey about what I say.
No, I'm happy to reiterate that we have made negative tens of thousands of dollars.
There you go. Okay. All right. Perfect. Then that's all the open now. How do you then approach making this app? Because again, you made your thing and you're continuing making your thing and your thing is your life to a certain degree. I mean, it's a point now where, you know, you're no longer gainfully employed by a standard kind of thing. You're now kind of in this on your own, which is great and awesome and superb. Yeah. But it's now you and Shane and a whole bunch of other people kind of promoting for this. How do you grow this thing? Like what's been your approach of getting, because obviously you probably have in your own mind of like, okay, I'm at this many users now. In a year or so or two, I want to get to this number. You know, how do I get from point A to point B?
Right. Yeah, it's a lot of guess and check in that regard also. I would say what we are working towards right now, the hardest, is we have a new designer coming on next week. We have some other contract work that's going to be done soon. And our goal is for this December 20th, we should be submitting a new version of the app to the App Store that is completely rebranded from a pure branding perspective. Like all of our badge artwork is going to be redone, all of our color palettes, possibly our logo and some other stuff, along with those added viral features we talked about, like the challenging people who aren't even on the app. And the reason to have it done by December 20th is because we will also, if all goes well, and this is actually, there's a lot more house of cards involved in this next part, but we are going to need to rebuild our web experience, because right now when you share a photo to say Twitter or Facebook or something, then you view that photo on our site. And then you either interact with it or you don't. And right now, there's no reason for you to interact with it. And right now, that is an awful missed opportunity from our perspective. So we're going to need to rebuild the website, and that needs to be done by the end of the year. And all this because last January, we saw a doubling of our user base with very little effort, no effort, really. Just because people are looking for interesting ways to do like New Year's resolution, 365-day photo project type things. And so if we do all of that together and we do it right, then that puts us in a position to get a lot of relaunch press and get a lot of New Year's resolution press and some other things, and hopefully amplify that doubling to a much greater extent this year. So that is our one and only focus for the next 3 months.
Is to figure out how to get... I guess that makes sense, especially, you know, if I'm on Twitter or if I'm on a social network and I see something like a link that says, hey, look at what I post in Mission Pick, you know, there's no need for me to click onto that sort of thing. And yeah. Even Twitter now, because those things have started building in functionality, like, for example, if you share any post on my site or on our internet site, it makes a card in Twitter where you can then actually listen to the podcast directly from your Twitter webpage, which is kind of cool. And I imagine like Mission Pick sort of going for that sort of same idea where you could, you know, you go to a tweet and it has this link there and now you could upvote it or join if you're part of, you know, already logged in or something that you could actually interact with it there.
Right. Yeah.
So let's,
there's a lot of work to do there.
So, well, you know, cause we're almost at the hour mark. We actually have like 10 minutes left in this entire, you know, interview here, at least in the proper show. What, I mean, beyond user growth, beyond all this stuff, I mean, obviously those are the big hurdles of any application, specifically a free application. I'd say they're actually grander hurdles, especially because if you think of a paid application, you know, and though you want people to use the application, if you're a paid app, you know, people buy said app, you've already gotten their $3. You've already gotten their $2.
Right.
You know, not saying that doesn't take, that doesn't to degrade anything a paid app does. They've already got the money, and that's cool, and that's sort of, you know, why there are these applications that are paid for. But being a free app, you know, your mission is there's other challenges and stuff like that because not, you know, there's certain things that go in it. What's the future hold beyond all these things? Like, let's say that by the end of the year everything works out, that all these that the user base doubles, that everyone's like, oh my God, this is a perfect way to do my photo a year kind of resolution. I can have fun and I can get my friends in it. Let's say all those things work out. And obviously that's always the big if. It's like, well, that all those things work out, we'll be worried kind of thing. But then what comes next? What's the next push?
Yeah. My wife and my mother keep asking me the exact same question. It's really interesting. Because when you think about it, each new user could only possibly cost me more money. Like there's no end to how much any given user can cost me. But no, realistically, once we get enough users, we have a couple of different things that we're excited to try out. I'll spill two of them. The first and easiest would be that we would love to have like sponsored missions. So like maybe today's mission is water, sponsored by Charity Water or something. And then the winner has a well named after him, or maybe it's like sponsored by Canon and you get a camera or something. So I think the level of engagement that we get out of any given photo mission is infinitely more engagement than you would get out of like the average app on Instagram or something. Like suddenly it's not about whether or not I saw it. It's about the fact that I, one, have to interact with this sponsored mission, and two, have to interact with hundreds of thousands of other people's interactions with this sponsored ad. So that could be very powerful. And then the other is that we would really like to do some sort of like revenue share art print situation where like people who make the top 10 list can maybe sell their prints for a revenue share for a given period of time or something. Because even now, even with our smaller user base, the photos that show up on the leaderboard every day are sometimes just like mind-blowingly stunning. And I would love to have them on my wall.
Right.
I would be happy to share that.
That's a sign, especially if you, the creator, just like, that's an amazing picture. Where can I buy this? You know, can I print this out somehow? Like that seems like also no-brainer, but you know, no-brainers still take a lot of effort to pull off. And
yes,
you talk about printing a photo. It's like, well, that's easy. You just print it on your printer. Like, well, no. What if you want a nice, you know, framed photo, then that there's services for that. And it's like, how do you integrate with that service? And how do you then make it easy? And then the idea of like, well, someone else wants to buy that photo that you post online. How do you share that money with somebody? And how do you work it in legally? And you know, do we have to pay taxes? You know, all these sort of things that no one thinks about because they just go, well, that's a cool idea. But there's a lot of business that goes into that cool idea that I always find fascinating and I like to sort of bring out because I know that those sort of things have challenges and I always find it both appreciative as a sort of smaller guy but as a person that utilizes a lot of these apps, watching somebody that I consider bigger than me do those sort of things, have those exact same challenges.
Yes, none of them are easy problems by any stretch. I personally am a really big fan of doing things that I don't know how to do and have kind of built my life around that. And I definitely don't know what I'm doing. So I am in a great spot right now.
Well, you began your life online as a prominent figure, just saying, well, what would happen if I just traveled Amtrak and worked various jobs for, you know, X amount of years of my life? And now you're at a point where you're like, what if I just made an application where I gave a prompt and people took pictures of said prompt and voted on that? I mean, again, that's me simplifying Mission Pick down to a very,
yeah,
very
totally.
Totally like a drip kind of idea. But that makes a lot of sense. That speaks a lot to you as a person versus, you know, Mission Pick as a product, which I guess that's kind of cool to hear.
Yeah. Going back to the photos real quick, I just wanted to say one last thing. Like we do print photos right now. So like if you win the day, if you have the highest number of votes at the end of the day and like top the leaderboard, then we do print out your photo and send it to you for free and emboss it with the little Mission Pick winning logo and write you like a handwritten postcard. And I only say all of this to say, I have thought about keeping some of those. Like there was one where there was like this bald eagle who had just caught like a salmon or something.
Oh my
God. I don't know where the guy was or what kind of lens he was using, but it looked amazing.
Wow. Damn. That's a shot.
Yeah. And then we have Einar, who is like from the Diamond Club. He's a photographer out of Norway who every single day takes a different photo of Lego snow troopers. He has three minifigure snow troopers, and just like seeing how creative he gets with all of the missions is, it like makes my day every single day.
That's wow. This is why I like the product. Why I'm glad to hear it's always refreshing to hear the creator of something.
Yeah.
Not to speak fondly of his product, but especially when it comes to the internet, you know, you talk to anybody online that does these things. Especially, you know, there's a lot of vapidness sometimes in the internet space. You know, a lot of people are just like, oh, I'm making this amazing product. We're going to innovate the socials, you know, using buzzword upon buzzword upon buzzword upon buzzword just to see, you know, who to impress, what VC funding they'll get, and then sell it, and then, you know, go and do whatever thing they want to do. It's refreshing to hear somebody talk about their product in a way that's not just simply like, oh, we're doing this and this and this, but just like, man, our users are doing some amazing pictures. And I'm finding it fascinating how someone takes these minifigs and does something with it. It's really cool to hear that from someone making something, especially like this kind of product where it's not simply just your friends using it. It's not simply just Diamond Club using it. It's now,
yeah,
you know, the entire world can join in. And that's kind of cool to hear that. Brett, a complete and utter pleasure to have you on. Let's say people want to actually, you know, utilize Mission Pick. Let's say that they have, that this is their first introduction to it. How can people not only engage with you, but how can they get their hands on Mission Pick?
Yeah, super easy. You go to missionpick.com/app, and that'll take you straight to the iPhone App Store. And I know I'm going to hear it, and I'm sorry about it, but it's only on iPhone right now. And I promise it will be on Android someday, but that day will come after one of you gives me $200,000.
I'll make it a very, very quick thing, even though I'm jumping in and talking for Brett, and Brett will probably agree. It's not as easy to make a cross application app, you know, app as it seems. And the Android space is one of those spaces that, you know, for better or worse, is fragmented to hell. And that becomes an entirely different challenge for a man like Brett Rounseville with, you know, that well, because again, it becomes this challenge of now I've got to hire an Android front end person because,
yeah,
yes, there are. And I know a lot, some of you will change, but wait, Robert, there are those crossover tools I keep seeing where you just code it once and it runs everywhere. And it's like, well, it's not quite that simple because there are different types of ways you interact with an application. Like if you put I use an iPhone personally, but if you put an Android phone in front of me, I get confused. Like, I'm not used to that specifically that, you know, methodology of thinking, and the same goes for both. And I realized I chimed into the end of like your spiel and stuff like that, but that's something we didn't really talk about. I was like, that's right, I keep forgetting it's an iOS app only.
Totally cool. I don't fault you at all. And in fact, those crossover tools work really great if you're making an app for like a restaurant and it's a menu and like your open hours.
Yes. But, yeah. It's when you start, you know, judging, and then, you know, and then there's the idea of like, well, how do you make this optimized? It's like, well, they're not really optimized. Like, they're great, you know, they're great tools, and they work out well. But yeah. at the end, native experience, is, you know, and not just native as in native coded for that thing. It's more native as in natively designed. Like, it's designed with the idea of, all right, I'm on iOS. I take advantage of things like we were talking about, you know, like getting more users involved. And now that there's the ability for an application to exist in iMessage. Challenge that. That's different from how Google handles their internal applications and background processes. And then the idea of, well, what version of Android do we support? Do we support this version, the latest one? Do we, you know,
screen sizes and what human interface guidelines are we using?
It's
crazy.
Things that you don't think about as a user and that you never should as a user. That's not, you know, the beauty part of UI, you know. I always remember people saying that UI or user interface or UX user experience, that the best designs of those are the ones where the users don't even think about them and don't even notice them.
Those are
a challenge to develop.
I actually kind of wish I were still at a point where I never thought about user interface or user experience.
Well, you're developing
now. I wish I could go back to the world where I didn't notice all the things that Twitter does.
You never can. Because the thing is, the user will always know when there's a bad experience, but they'll never, ever... They'll never compliment like, wow, that was a very usable thing. Whereas you as a developer, and that's what me,
totally.
Especially the guy that sort of knows a thing or two about development. When I see a really good interface, like, wow, this was fucking solid. That's a brilliant way of thinking about it. Like my brain will click that in. Whereas I know like my dad was like, what are you talking about? It's just like, it just does it. You don't think about it. You don't have to fight it. And it's like, what do you mean fight it? I'm like, you know what I'm talking about. And I have to explain to my dad, like, remember that shitty Java console that you had to use? Remember that stupid application for your medical stuff and why I kept screaming at it? It's like, oh, yeah, okay, now I understand. Like, I have to teach my parents what the hell these things are because I'll, like, for me, my dad has, like, some medical software that he uses that at the time was coded so weirdly that he couldn't upgrade his browser because they had, like, because, like, the way the application was, I won't say the name of it, just, you know, because I don't want to name anything like that. But it was coded, and I could tell as a guy that knows this shit, it was basically a web page layer, if you will, masquerading as an application. Like, basically someone took like a .NET, put the giant URL thing, you know, the window app thing, linked it, whatever. That I could tell it was just because I know what web applications do in that environment, and I know how to trick them to show me that they're true colors. and I could tell because I kept thinking, like, why would it matter if you upgraded to IE8? You know, why did you have to stay in 6 or 7 or whatever the version was? Like, and this is how far back it was. Like, why would it matter if you upgraded it unless I go, oh, they're just a fucking web application hiding here. And they take advantage of how IE8 interprets things. And because, you know, or version does, and because you upgraded it, it was way more standards compliant and it followed way more things, they'd have to recode their entire engine if you just fucking tricked it.
They're probably scared to show the transparency on PNGs.
Yeah, and that's why it was like, infuriated me no end as a network security guy. I was just like, you guys are fucking like hyper insecure here. This is bad. and it was, you know, it'd be those things that infuriate me. I'm just like, you don't, you know, this isn't how it's supposed to be. And if that's the case, then there's, you know, you don't need this application layer is used, you know, completely a fraud, and why are we bother, you know, why bother distributing a product that way? Just make it a goddamn internal URL. Why does it have to why must we run this .NET interface that just has basically a web browser inside?
Just stop lying to me.
Well, because that's what bugs that's the world that, you know, I feel like I completely fucking broke the closing part. I was already there, but that's the things that I love when I do, don't worry. Those are the things that I appreciate now. And so whenever I see really good UI UX, I will you know, scream its praises, as a guy that knows just how much work goes into that. How many hours upon hours, just like, fuck, is this working? Is this going to be the one? Is this, you know, will users find, will people click on this? Will people know to click on this? Will people even know to touch this? Does this look touchable? Does this look, you know, and hours upon hours of just screaming how you do it. Cause again, it's not simply just a file menu anymore, especially when we think of a touch application. And for all those people who are screaming, why isn't there an Android version? This is why there isn't an Android version. If you'd like to propose one to Brett, I'm certain he would love to see it.
Oh, yeah. It'd be great.
All right. So back to spiel. Go to missionpick.com/app. get the iOS app, or if people find you online, that they just want to, you know, talk to you and ask you more questions about this stuff, or just kind of interact with you in general.
Sure. Yeah. Best place to find me is always Twitter. So I'm Amtrekker on Twitter. That's Amtrekker.
There you go. Of course, I'm not. If you want to find me, I'm at Vincent404 there on the Twitters. And if you want to catch previous episodes of this podcast, head to our website, cosmicradio.tv/8bitlife. There you'll find links to the show notes, our Twitter account, which is at 8bitlife podcast. And of course, if you happen to have 5-10 cents around and you want to help this podcast grow after you've, you know, given whatever money you need to give to Mission Pick, launch the app, ran it a couple times, click whatever ads are there. If there's no ads there, just keep using it, utilize it. And you're like, well, you know, at the end of the day, after I did all this stuff, I have like a nickel and you know, 2 pennies. Head to patreon.com/8bitlife. Help this show become bigger, better, and more awesome. That's it for today. Until next time, we talk to another geek about something completely and utterly random. Bye, people. This has been a CosmicRadio.tv audio production. For more awesome shows, head on over to our website, CosmicRadio.tv.